This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances, check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those new year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. Based on FICO score 8 model, offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest, just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode this week. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope you guys are doing well. I am excited, and the reason for that is I just realized, as this week's episode drops, it is the last week before we turn the corner into some of the best months of the year, because July and August are my least favorite months of the entire year, and this is the last week of the crappiest month of the year. So I'm all excited. We had a ton of stuff going on this past week. A lot of good stuff, a lot of big changes, crazy stuff happening. And I'll just share some of that with you. The first one is my oldest son went to school for the first time. He is now a kindergartner, so mom and dad are getting used to a new rhythm of getting him to school. And, you know, there's that anticipation and, the change and hoping he's good throughout the day. And he's taking it on like a champ. He's doing great. We're excited for him. It was quite funny the first day of school, though, to see the dynamic of his mom and his little brother as he went to school. And his little brother was all sad that he was going to miss brother and not be able to play with him all day long. And the little guy and my wife, man, they had the waterworks going. It was a good day. I was kind of chuckling a little bit just because I just did. But no, that's exciting. So school's underway. Let's see, what else did we have going on? I got to go to an archery shoot this past weekend. 3D archery shoot. I have not been to one for a year or two. It might even be 2 years since I went to one. And I have not shot my bow this year. This is the worst I've ever been as far as preparation and shooting my bow going into a hunting season. Normally, I shoot once a week, once every other week throughout the summer just to, break the ice and make sure I'm feeling like I'm on and all that stuff. I have not picked my bow up literally this past week. Last week was the first time I picked my bow up since March. I was in a winter archery league shooting, and that was the last time I picked it up. So I was kind of nervous. I was thinking, am I going to make a fool of myself? And I went over to Andover, New Jersey, and shot one of the courses at the R100. I shot the North American course, so 50 course target, and I was fortunate enough to do it with Chris Romano, who is the host of the Wing and Tail podcast on our network. He was fortunate enough to let me join in with he and his family. They were a hoot. They were a lot of fun. You know, it was really fun to see him and his brother Anthony button heads like brothers and, shooting competitively. Got to meet his cousin Joey and his dad. His dad was a riot. I really enjoyed my time with those guys. I was so thankful that they let me join in their group. You know, I was really happy with the way I shot. You know, it was funny. I struggled with the shots that I didn't want to struggle with. Basically, those 30 to 40-yard shots. That's where I might have had a little bit less consistency in my releases. You know, I shot a couple more of the lower scores on targets like an 8. That was also toward the beginning of the course, so maybe I was just trying to get into a rhythm and routine or whatever. But I didn't shoot as well the first half of the course in the closer targets. But when we got to the back half, there was a stretch of, I think, 5 targets where I never moved my single pin sight. It stayed right at 50 yards. And I shot 5 targets in a row, and I shot a 12 on every single target. I had good, crisp releases. I was holding steady, pulling through my shot. I was having issues with my sight tape. I don't know what changed or what I did that's different, but my sight tape is off. It is shooting high the further out I go. So my 80-yard pin is wrong. It's more like 72 on my sight tape or something crazy like that. I don't understand what I did or what happened, but it's off. Anyway, I shot a moose 85 yards, and I was guessing where my pin needed to be for 85 yards. I took the shot, and they said, you hit really high. And I looked in the binoculars, and my left and right was absolutely perfect, and I had a really good release. I was like, that shouldn't have been high. I think it was my sight. And I said, okay. So I let them all shoot, and before we went to pull arrows, I said, I want to shoot one more shot just to make sure that it was the sight tape and not me. So I dropped my sight tape 5 yards on the sight tape and shot. And I shot a 12, 85 yards on this moose. Another crisp, perfect release. And I was so happy with the fact that I was shooting well, considering that. Now, my shoulders are hurting. I can't lie. I've got to do some TLC on them and make sure I don't overdo it in the future. Another good thing I had going on, I had put some cameras out when I was out the other weekend doing that food plot and hanging some tree stands. And I hung some of those M-Core cell cameras up from Radix, and I got a really nice buck on this week already. It's a nice nine-pointer. I bet it's pushing 125-inch deer. It's got really nice long tines, but I'm pretty daggone sure it's a two-year-old. He is got this long, lanky, slender body and all the shapes and characteristics at his neck, his shoulders, and everything else that just says, I'm young. You know, maybe he's three, but I really think he's a two-year-old. And I just think, wow, what an awesome, awesome buck. I don't know that I can bring myself to shoot him just because he's such a pretty deer. And I know that if he would, by the grace of God, make it another year, ideally 2 years, he could be an absolute stud. Probably the last thing that I'm really excited about and turning the corner is on my way home from the shoot on New Jersey, I checked out a couple of places that I hunt the past few years and scouted and just did a little bit of, intel. I wouldn't say I was heavily scouting, but I was kind of checking the overall area out. I was seeing what was in crop fields and, you know, was there any acorns or anything like that on oak trees and stuff like that. And I got a good head start of where I want to go next weekend or this coming weekend when I'm going to do some scouting for bear down there. I think I have a really good handle of how, where, and all that stuff of what I want to do for cameras and where I want to start putting a little bit of boot leather down just to get a layout of the land a little better, because I think there's a couple places that have good potential. But I'm also excited because in another 2 weeks, I get the opportunity to possibly check out some other new spots, some private land that I got tipped off of. And I've trying to squeeze this all in, and we're literally 6 weeks away from segment A of bear season. You know, we're less than that for the statewide archery season. I feel like there's so much to do and not enough time as normal. But you know what? I am so excited as we're turning the corner. Last thing I wanted to share you in, I'm going to do a little bit of advertising for myself personally. I actually bought a different truck this last few weeks. So I have my old truck. It's a 2012 four-door, 5.5-foot bed F-150 with a 5-liter engine, and it has 171,000 miles on it. And it is for sale. I'm going to put it on Facebook Marketplace probably this week and see if anybody would like it. But if anybody's interested in looking at a truck, hit me up on Instagram or Facebook. And you can also email me, pawoodsmanpodcast@gmail.com. If anybody's interested in checking it out, seeing some pictures, and see if you'd like to have a used truck, let me know. All right, now we're turning the corner here, and we're getting into this week's episode. I have a returning guest, Matt Beeswanger. I had him on a few years ago after he killed 180-inch giant whitetail with a recurve in the state of Illinois. And, you know, Matt and I since then have been able to, we'll keep in touch and, you know, just check in on stuff every now and then with each other. It was really good to acquaint myself with Matt. He's a heck of a hunter and a heck of a nice guy. And it's been a joy to get to know him. And I had someone reach out here recently that they were interested in traditional archery a little bit. And I wanted to have Matt on. He's been doing this for quite a long time, and he's gone through a progression. And this week's episode's not necessarily going to be about, you know, the getting started and the arrow setup and how do you aim and instinctive shooting versus gap shooting and all that stuff. No, this episode is actually going to be Matt's philosophy and mindset when it comes to hunting with a recurve or a longbow, because the mindset is different. You know, he talks about the new podcast YouTube channel, the group that he is with, and their name is called Inside 20. He'll talk about that a little bit, but everything about this episode revolves around being inside 20, inside of 20 yards, and how it is a different game when you go from hunting with your crossbow or a compound into the world of traditional archery. Matt is going to talk about, first of all, he's going to talk about the progression of where he got to where he is now. And I think that's important because a lot of people get interested and say, oh, I want to hunt with a stick bow. I want to hunt with a recurve. But, you know, maybe they're doing it for the wrong reasons, or maybe there's things they haven't thought about as they're approaching it. And Matt's going to share his story from about 2006, 2008 until present day, that progression of building himself up to be a traditional archery hunter. And then he's going to talk a lot about setups. He's going to talk about viewing a spot and how he's going to break that down, how he might pick a different location, pick a different stand set, what he likes out of that stand set in order to make it successful. Because for him, it's a lot different than just sitting in his old tree stand, that he can cover 30, 40, 50 yards on multiple trail intersects. He really tries to break down a little bit more detail about that. And then we just have an overall fun hunting conversation that leads us down into a couple of stories and previous events. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this, especially for those guys who have interest in traditional archery and want to learn more and get better with it. This is a guy, and I would encourage you to reach out to Matt or anybody from Inside 20 for more help. We're going to dive into this episode. Shout out to our partners, Radix Hunting. As I said, I've got M-Core cell cameras running, and I cannot say enough positive things about how easy they are to set up and use. The image quality is fantastic. Check out my Instagram and Facebook page story. Every now and then I'll put some pictures up, and I'm just blown away by the quality of those images. You can check out any of the other gear they have to offer on radixhunting.com. The Monarch Blind Series, tree stands, trail camera accessories via stick and pick. Check them out at radixhunting.com. And also Little Mountain Outfitters. Hey, this is the time of year to fine-tune your setups here. In fact, it was actually 2-3 months ago, but if you need last-minute stuff, go to Little Mountain Outfitters. Little Mountain Outfitters is located in Richland, Pennsylvania, and for those of you who are looking for that personalized feel in anything you do in the archery world, but maybe you're not that close to Richland, Pennsylvania, and you still want to support local business, you like what these guys have to say and do because they're experts, go to littlemountainoutfitters.com and you can check out all of the inventory that they have in stock. And you can support local business, get that local business feel over the internet, and you can get that delivered. And if you use the code WOODSMAN10, WOODSMAN10, you can save yourself 10% off of your next purchase from Little Mountain Outfitters if you do it online. Again, littlemountainoutfitters.com and use the code WOODSMAN10. Hey, we're going to dive into this episode with Matt. Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual 3-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year. We tried to do a podcast last week, and it was a little bit of a cluster because of the daggone technical difficulties, so this is my favorite way to do a podcast. So thank you for letting me come and invite myself and sit here. I'm sitting in your basement here, Matt, and I'm looking at all the crazy whitetails here. I mean, like, I've never I don't think I've ever picked up an 8-pointer that you said you shot in 2010. I don't think I've ever picked up an 8-pointer that was this hit. You ever weigh this?
No, I don't think so.
Like, I feel like I'm holding like a 10 to 12 pound European mount of, yeah. It's a pure 8-pointer, but I mean, if he's got, I bet he's got close to 40 inches in mass. It's just so heavy.
Yeah, he's a cool buck. And I just like how he's dark rack, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. There's something about whitetail. So to come down to do an in-person podcast and be at somebody's place and get to see their trophy room and see, you know, this buck right here in front. The last time I had you on the show, this is what we talked about. And wasn't he pushing 190?
No, he was, I think Jared measured him at 180.
180?
Yeah.
But still, I mean, that's a heavy deer. I mean, it's just so cool to see this. I mean, you got sheds for years, a mountain of sheds. I couldn't have something like that because my dogs would make it a mess. But this is cool. So, Matt, thank you for letting me come over.
Thanks for having me. This is great. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, during our technical difficulties last week, we were talking, and you know, I said I wanted to talk a little bit about traditional archery hunting, and I wanted to talk about archery hunting just in general with the upcoming season with you. But we got to talking, and you got some new stuff going on in your world. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that.
But, sure.
You know, just, you know, let's just recap real quick from the last time I had you on. What's been happening?
Man, a lot. Like, just life. Kids growing up, my oldest daughter's getting married in October.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah, so, man, I don't even know, like, the last time we talked was, that was after the 23 season.
Right after
It was spring of 24, so I forget when she got engaged, but that's all kind of happened fast, you know, and now we're going out to Colorado in October for this wedding, so we're looking forward to that. And then, you know, Maggie and Willow are just growing up so quick, going to get them hunting this year, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, you were telling me about that, and they seem excited.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They've gone with me a few times. I've just taken them gun hunting.
Okay.
We'd go over to this one property and shoot a doe, and you know.
And they love it?
Yeah, and they get involved, too. When I bring a deer home, you know, they're not grossed out or nothing. They want to help try to drag it from the driveway to where I hang them up and, you know, watch me butcher it up and everything, and then...
It's all part of the process, because you see a lot of that where I think people get infatuated with killing stuff, which, hey, I like killing stuff too, but it's a whole process that's makes it fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you know, we eat meat. We eat the deer meat all the time, whether it's like the hot dog, we just had that tonight, and bacon burgers, I mean, you name it.
How many deer do you have to kill a year in order to last until next season?
I usually average, I don't know, maybe 5 to 8.
Okay.
You know, but I wind up giving some away to people, you know, like, but that either don't hunt or some buddies that maybe didn't, you know, shoot as many as they'd like or something, you know, so it usually works out like that.
I do the same thing. I have family that takes it. For the longest time, my sister-in-law, she would take, the one year I gave her 3, and I think she had them gone. They have 4 kids, and I think she had them out of the freezer between like March and April. Like, they just hammered deer meat. Like, so that was kind of funny. I was like, man, I gotta start shooting more. And since then, she started hunting, and she's been shooting her own deer and butchering her own deer.
Cool.
And it's so cool to see that, you know, take that part of hunting, and all I did was share meat and expose it to them.
Yeah.
And now she started hunting, and she shot, man, she's a killing machine now, killing
that's
all kinds
awesome.
Of stuff. So I mean, I love that stuff.
Yeah, great.
But so, in addition to stuff happening, you were talking a little bit about Inside 20.
Right.
So you shared it with me, but I'd really like you to talk about Inside 20.
Yeah.
How did this start for you? What's going on, and what is it?
Okay. Well, for me, well, what it is it originated with a couple guys in Georgia, Matt Tyler and his buddy Tim Chanel and Jake Reese. And these are Christian guys that are really into traditional bow hunting. So they started a podcast and like a nonprofit so they can raise money, donate to organizations and stuff, and just, you know, try to encourage people to, you know, pick up a traditional bow, talk traditional bow hunting. You know, they have guests on that are traditional bow hunters, and then they'll do things to raise money, you know, to help support, you know, or donate to an organization, usually something that has to do with the youth or something. So I'd say when they started, I don't know how I found out about them. I guess Facebook, somebody was posting about it. You know, I was like, oh, this is a new, you know, traditional bow hunting podcast. I'll take a listen to this. So I started listening to them. And I reached out to Matt, I believe, one time, just said something about if he was coming to ETAR. That's the big traditional archery shoot in Pennsylvania here. And then, I don't know, we just got messaging back and forth a few times. And it would have been the summer or the spring, I guess, of going into the 24 season. Yeah. He messaged me and was like, hey, would you want to do this bow hunting league? It's like a competition thing, kind of like what Jared and Cole do, but it's, I don't know if you heard of that. It's run out of somebody down south, and it's like 3-man teams, but you can be like multiple states. And I really don't know all the ins and outs about it, cause I haven't really followed it, but I was like, yeah, sure. They have like a traditional only category. So it's 3-man teams. And, so me, him, and Jake were going to be, the two guys that were involved with Inside 20 at the time. And myself, we were the traditional archery team, want a team for this bow hunting league. So we were talking on a group text all through the season, leading up to the season, during the season and everything. And, then it would have been, it was probably in January this year. So, you know, not that long ago. Then they approached me the one night, like, hey, would you want to be, you know, part of our Inside 20 thing here, you know, with, doing the podcast and just helping us out with whatever, you know, what we do, you know? And I was like, man, at first I was like, well, what do I have to bring to this? You know, because I was like, these guys are all younger like you, you know? And I was like, do you realize what you're getting into? Like, you think hunting with a stick bow is hard, and now you're going to try to teach me to do technology
stuff?
Well,
you tell me, like, technology and you don't go together. So how's that been?
No, not good at all. Yeah. Well, no, it's been good, but it's been slow because the technology stuff has not been good for me. I mean, I've only recently started activating my own cell cameras. I get my wife to do it for me because I couldn't figure it out.
That's a good
one. I'm really bad with that kind of stuff. But it has been great, really. And what I really like about it is just being part of something where, you know, we're reaching out to people, but we're not doing it for ourselves. It's not like, hey, look at me, look at the deer I shoot and stuff. Because, I mean, we're just hunting with recurves and longbows and stuff. We're not killing all kinds of giant stuff. And, you know, that it's mostly just to encourage people, you know, to maybe start shooting a traditional bow. But also, you know, look forward to, like, you know, seeing our faith brought out. So we always, you know, are not shy about that, you know, in leading people in that direction. And you know, the guests we have on are always people that are, you know, involved in traditional archery for a long time and stuff, and have a lot of experience and great stories to tell, and things that we can, you know, other people can learn from them as well as us, you know.
It's kind of a niche thing in many cases, because there's a lot of people that have traditional bows, shoot them to some degree, but to be actually an active, successful traditional archery hunter, I think is a different level. It's a different, it's almost in a sense, it's a different ball game. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was thinking when I said I wanted to have you on the podcast. Cause I mean, we talked traditional archery last time I had you on, but we also talked about this buck that you killed and the story for that. And I have friends, I have listeners, I myself included a little bit, have a lot of people that are just interested. And I got to watch how I word this, because it could sound negative, and I don't mean it negative at all. But I feel in the world of hunting and media that traditional archery can be a fad for people. Not that it is a fad. It's right, not that right. at all. But it's, oh, it's the latest. It's the coolest thing. I'm going to pick up a stick bow. I'm going to shoot a deer with it.
Yeah.
And it gets, you know, I've seen people that they don't shoot it enough, and then they still want to hunt with it, or they lose confidence, and then they give it up. And there's a lot of that. And I think one thing that you said on that last podcast we did that has never left me for other aspects of hunting too, but you were talking about the year before you killed this deer, mm-hmm. and you had him bedded down for a long time, and he was in compound distance,
right?
But he was not there. And I remember, like, did it ever cross your mind, like, man, if I had my compound, I'd be done. And you were like, never once did that bug me. Like, I knew this is what I wanted to do. And I took that same thought when it came to other aspects of hunting. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm going to do it with this bow, or I'm going to do it with this muzzleloader, or whatever it is. And I really appreciated that. So the first question I really wanted to revisit is, when did you pick up a stick bow and decide, I'm doing this?
Well, it was a slow start. I got one in, I think, 2006, and just right off the bat, I thought, oh, I'm going to go out and hunt with this thing, like, right away. You know, I'm shooting it, and I think when I got it, it was already during hunting season, so I'm like, I'm going to go into late season and try to shoot when we have that break between, like, archery and late season, that, like, one-month time there. Gun season falls in there, but, you know, I was gun hunting then, so I was like, I'm going to get accurate with this recurve, and I'm going to hunt late season. Well, I learned pretty quick that that wasn't happening. And then the next year, I practiced a bunch with it, and I got the, you know, a better arrow set up and stuff, and then the next year, I probably would have been, well, then it would have been 07, and I started shooting stuff then that year, but it was I didn't hunt just solely with the recurve. You know, I had a spot where there was a lot of deer, and it was pretty easy to get shots at stuff close range. So I'd go over there early season, and I killed like one or two. And then I was like, okay. And then it was like getting close to time to go to Illinois or whatnot. And then it was like, now I got to, you know, take the compound. And I was compound hunting. So I hunted, I was mostly a compound hunter with just a little bit of recurve hunting, you know, just dabbled in it, you know, for, you know. And I did shoot a couple bucks in Illinois with it. I never shot a buck in Pennsylvania, though, with it until, what year was it? 2021.
Okay.
Yeah, so I went all those years and never even shot a buck at home. I just was, like, doe hunting with it, and then when I got serious, I was taking the compound, you know, and all the Illinois hunting for those years. That I killed one in 2009 out there with the recurve, but even for out there, it was like, well, I did that that year, but after that, it was like, I want to kill a real big buck. I don't want to be limited, you know, and then after I did kill what was a pretty good deer, that one up there, and that was probably my biggest buck, but that was in 2020. Then after that, it just, I was getting more into shooting the recurve starting like 2017 and a little more 18, and then I bought a new one in 2019. So I was getting more into it, but I still was taking the compound, you know, but I was hunting more with the recurve. I found myself hunting more with the recurve and less with the compound. Then after I shot that buck in 2020, I was like, okay, I'm going to be more like next year. And then the next year came, and I don't know if you remember, like me, Cole, and Tim, and or not Tim, but me and Cole and Cole's cousin Greg, we all drew Iowa. So we were going out to Iowa, and that was 2021. And I thought, well, I'm going to hunt with the recurve there because I don't know what their setups are going to be like. It was with an outfitter. So we went there, and we all killed great bucks pretty quick. And then I went over to Illinois, and I thought, okay, I'm going to shoot one with the recurve. And I hunted like, I don't know, 9-10 days maybe. I had shot opportunities and stuff, but just nothing I really wanted close, you know. And then it got down to like towards the end, and it was a rainy day, and I was like high winds, and I thought, I'm just going to go with the compound. I know if I go to this one stand, I'll get a shot at something. And so I went there, and, you know, within a couple hours, here comes a buck. It was one of those ones over there on the floor, and shot it, and that was it. It was like that quick, it was over, and it was just like, man, like.
It's time for fall food plots, and I encourage you to look no further this year than planting Vitalize Seeds Carbon Load. Guys, this is a highly diverse plant mix of grains, grasses, brassicas, and legumes that is extremely winter hardy. It gives great tonnage, and it's browse tolerant. This thrives after the nitro boost, and it acts as a weed barrier in the springtime, and not to mention all the benefits it does for your native wildlife, giving ample tonnage and sequestering nutrients from deep within the soil. Check it out at vitalizeseed.com, where you can get your order today and learn more about soil health and providing great tonnage to wildlife this fall.
Listen, landowners, let Stephen Chilcote, land and timber consultant, turn your land into a deer and wildlife magnet. With over 25 years of land and timber management experience, Steve's approach optimizes food and cover to attract deer and increase hunting success for his clients. Visit us online at chilcoteforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510 to make sure your land is the ultimate hunting paradise.
So I was like, next year I'm not even bringing the compound out here. And then that was, so the 22 season, I didn't hunt with it at all, you know. And then I shot deer, you know, throughout the year, some with the recurve, and I did kill a couple that year in gun season, but nothing with the compound. And then after that, I was like, no, I'm good. I'm just going to stick with this. I mean, my hunting, you know, I'm 50 now. At that time, I was a little younger, you know, whatever it was. But I was looking at it like, you know, I'd only have who knows how many seasons. And I really, really like doing it this way. And it just was so much more meaningful to me. And I was like, this is how I'm going to do it, you know. And I haven't really seen where, you know, I'm like less, I don't have less venison. You know, I can always take the gun and get a couple does, yeah, if I have to and stuff, but it's just worked out. I've changed the way I hunt totally, you know. And when that was like the big like aha moment, like, and I think like, man, if I would have just done this, you know, way back, would have realized, you know, you need to change how you hunt with a traditional bow. I was hunting like a compound hunter with a trad bow and just hoping that stuff would be close. And once in a while it would get close, you know, and cause I'd always like, well, I want to have a setup cause I use a compound too. So if I make a setup, it's like, well, you know, I want it to work for both bows, where you have to look at it and, you know, I need to be shooting something that's close. I need to make an ambush point where I don't have to worry about anything beyond 20 yards. You know, it doesn't matter.
And that makes perfect sense. And that's a big bulk of what I would like to get into you with you a little bit here. But you kind of started the way I think a lot of people. They dabble and it grows, and you accomplish goals that you wanted to accomplish. And the more that you accomplish some of those goals as time goes on, the easier it is to make a transition to a new goal, being hunting more with the stick bow and stuff like that. When you think back to starting all the way back in 2006 to here we are going into the 2025 season, and you had a learning process and experiences. If you could do, is there anything that you would do over again in your learning process of stick bow and stick bow hunting? Is there things that you'd like, if I'd have known then what I know now, here's something I would have done to better prepare myself as an archer, better prepare myself as a hunter, a shooter, whatever?
One thing that has really helped is, you know, the company that you're around, the people that you're around. And I never put myself in the presence of anybody else that hunted with a traditional bow for years until, you know, probably the last 4 or 5 years, I started to develop a lot of friendships of other traditional bow hunters. But for all that time, all my buddies were compound guys and they were great people. And don't get me wrong, but I wasn't learning off of anybody else. There was, you know, so I was, I don't want to say outcast, but like, you know, I'm taking the recurve and everybody's compound hunting and, you know, they kind of make fun of me in a way, you know? And, so there's that where if I wish I would have been able to get around more people that could have taught me more, you know, in those earlier years. But looking back, things that if I would have known or would have realized, you know, it's all about the setup for me, you know, the close ambush point, you know, not worrying about, you know, how far away the deer is going to be, just trying to keep everything close, good cover, not hunting high off the ground. I always had the mentality of like you had to go, you know, really high in a tree stand and stuff. That's not the case. You know, you just have to be at that anywhere from 6 feet to 10 feet level, good backdrop, you know, and it's not, I'm going to say it's not hard. It's hard, but you can get more opportunity for close shots when you've figure out and focus on what you have to do and where you're going to get those close shots, and then only hunt in those types of situations. You know, it might take a couple sits, but then all of a sudden it works perfect, you know, and a deer pops out right where you were hoping for it to, you know, and it all goes down how you were planning it.
I remember, and along those lines, I think it was Fred Bear's quote about, you know, an archery hunter, a bow hunter can learn, something along the lines of a bow hunter can learn more about the game that they're hunting in a shorter time frame than somebody can with a rifle.
Right,
there,
right.
There, and it's just the way you hunt, right?
Yeah.
Like I think about the way I will sometimes deer hunt with a rifle, whether it's up a camp and stuff, but I mean, I'm trying to put as much in my favor because you could cover a bigger distance.
Right.
You don't have to be as fine-tuned. And I never really realized it until more recently about how much that applies when you transition from compound hunting to stick bow hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, with my compound, I've practiced a lot. I've gained a lot of confidence in that piece of equipment. I feel very confident under the right circumstances. I could shoot a deer 40, 50 yards. Some people shoot farther. But, I mean, you think about that window, and I love the title of your podcast of Inside 20. That is such a different net.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about, I don't even know how to articulate or start this point, but breaking that down. Like, breaking it down when you start talking about your scouting and everything else for your setups, where do you begin? Because I get into situations, and I've done this in many places, where I get into an analysis by paralysis type situation of which tree do I want to pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes that's a learning curve over time. Sometimes you start with the safe bet, you hunt it, and you learn it. Okay, I need to be over here X amount of yards, and you learn it over time. It's kind of an evolution of where that spot builds. But like, I can think of one stand that I just prepped here 2 weeks ago. I hung the stand 2 years ago, and I'm looking at it this year thinking, I think this is going to really, really work out. It's an aggressive sit because it's a point in a bedding area.
Mm-hmm.
But I put it as conservative as I could. And the reason I say that is the access, I have to walk up a very steep hill. So that way it hides my access. And I picked a tree that when I climb up, I'm basically eye level on this bench where I'm at, which I don't like. But I didn't want to go any farther because I felt it was going to be too intrusive. So right now my average shot distance on the main trail here is 25 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's 25, 30 yard shot with my compound. I'm comfortable with that. But I thought about it. Only because you and I did just talk recently, because I was thinking, like, you stick bow hunting and other people, I'm like, I don't know what I would do in this situation to try to get closer. So with that whole concept, I'm sure you've thought, had similar situations.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about, I mean, the places you've been hunting and that transition in breaking stuff down from compound hunting where you can shoot a longer distance to the stick bow.
Yeah, I can give you one example of a setup that I had for years, and it was out there in Illinois, in the timber, great bedding behind me, and it kind of comes up a hill from a CRP field, and it flattens off for a little bit, so deer would just cruise this little flat spot, and it would kind of drop off into this other ravine. And there was a walnut tree there I had to stand in for years, and this walnut tree, I'd rehang it every year. And I killed a lot of bucks there. I killed that big drop time buck and a bunch of them there. And I would always have the stand real high, and deer would just cruise right under me. If I had a north wind, it would blow right over them. If I had a south wind, then it was blowing away from them to me. So it was like, it was perfect. It was a great spot. But when I started really getting into hunting with a recurve, that time period I described, that was the tree I went back to in 2021 and killed that deer with the compound, like in mm-hmm. the first couple hours of sitting at that morning, you know, that's where I killed that buck, you know, that drop time buck the year before and others. So when it came to 22, I hung that same stand. I thought, I just got to lower it. I'm just going to lower it like 8 feet from where it was, you know, and I put it way down. It was, you know, cause it dropped off to the little flat below yeah. it. So I didn't have to go real high in the tree. I don't know how high it was, but I was sticking out on this tree, no cover, you know, it was a bigger tree at the bottom. So it was going to work, but I got picked out like crazy. It was a still morning, like, you know, nothing moving, like no wind, no leaves, no, you know, and I have does coming and they're getting to like 25, 30 yards, kind of quartering to a little bit. And then they'd see me, you know, look up, totally busted. And I even had one buck come in the one morning, you know, probably 140 inch deer. I was like, I might shoot this deer, you know, but same thing happened. He got to about 25, 30 yards. What is that? You know, and then he jumps down the hill a little bit and back out onto that little flat and stops. And then he's kind of looking back like he's trying to find me. But now compound, you would have already possibly been drawn. But as soon as he went to run, you could have immediately drawn, anchored. And when he stopped again, he was still 25, 30 yards maybe. You could have shot him no problem. But with the traditional bow, it's you got to have them so much closer and they, you know, undetected and stuff. So there's a cedar tree about 40 or 50 yards from this walnut. And so many deer would come from that way and walk right by this cedar tree. And I was like, I love this spot, but there's no other tree. There's just no other tree that I can get in. I have no cover. You know, a walnut tree in November has nothing.
Yeah.
And all these other trees there were kind of small, but here's this one cedar tree. And obviously it's got a lot of cover on it, you know. And it's not a big tree. I mean, it's probably where I had put the stand, it's probably only like that, you know. So, for 23 season, I put a stand in that cedar tree, and I hunted it one morning, had some deer come by, but then I killed that buck the next day at a different spot. But like, I knew like, okay, this cedar tree is going to work because of the situation, because I have cover, I'm low to the ground, deer are not going to pick me out, but they walk literally right there. Now I can't shoot behind me whatsoever. I can hardly shoot to the left or to the right. I can only shoot a little window in front of me. Like a, you know, probably 15 yards. I could shoot out to like maybe 20, but I'd say from where the deer approaches to where they're out of my, in the brush again, it might be a 15 yard span. There's a couple openings in there, but it's like precise. You know what I mean? I sat that last year, this past season in 2024, I was kind of letting that spot go. I did discover I have to sit it on a cloudy day. Because I went there the one morning, and the way the sun comes up, it is just blinding me. And the way I anchor, I anchor like real high up on my cheekbone, so I can't wear a hat, you know, with a bill on it. So I have to wear a hat or turn it around, like a knit hat or a stocking cap type thing. And I had does coming in, and I was going to try to shoot one of these does and film it, you know, and I had the camera going and stuff. And when I went to draw, they were right there 10 yards, but when I went to draw on them, it was like I could not even see them. It's like the way I had to turn and position my head, and when the sun was, I was blinded. They just like vanished, and they were right there. You know, I was like, okay, this is not good. So I didn't sit it again then until it was a cloudy day, and then it was getting sort of near the end of the time I was going to be there, and I was like, tomorrow's going to be a cloudy day. It's going to be perfect. I'm going to that cedar tree, and it was like, here came a buck right off the hill, walks right into me, just perfect. You know, that was that one up there, the one I shot last year. Shot him, and then I put my cousin in that tree like a couple days later. Exact same thing happened. You know, he killed the deer that was staying at the same spot. His came up the hill, mine came off the hill, and we both, you know, we grunted and stopped them at the exact, they were standing at, when I got up to the spot, and I was like, where was he at? He was like, oh, he was right there. And I was like, dude, that was exactly where my buck was standing. It was crazy. But just like spots like that. So you got to find something where you can really pinpoint where the deer is going to walk, and then have an ambush point there where everything's going to work, where you're not going to be blinded by the sun, or you're not going to, you know, the thermals are going to rise right for you or sink for you, right? You know, because, you know, like with a compound, you know, you can shoot, you know, 30, 40 yards or whatever. But for us, it's the hunting only really starts at 25 and under. It's totally different.
So that property that you're talking about, some of these deer, like you've had a lot of history with that property. You already talked about that, you know, that walnut you killed stuff out of with the compound, and you made an adjustment over to the cedar tree because you saw a deer come through there. But I know you hunt other places too. And one thing I'm wondering is, like, when I go to a new piece of property, I try to walk every deer trail I can. And, you know, I love if there's terrain involved. I love when there's, you know, fingers and points and, you know, all kinds of things, because it can just sometimes funnel stuff. And, you know, take the mountains of Pennsylvania. Like, everybody knows, like, on some of these ridges and valleys in Pennsylvania, like, sometimes that first bench down over on the mountain, that could be a great spot, but it's usually one line of movement. And, you know, if you follow the bench out and you go out to the point, you know, you might have a line of movement for animals come up a point. It might wrap around to, you know, another bench on the opposite side of the mountain. You might have multiple things coming together. And that's usually how I try to orient myself. But when you get to those places with a hub or an intersection, I find two things that I struggle with. Either it's so intrusive to get to an intersection because you're going past good sign to get to the best sign. You can have that happen, or you just get wrapped up in, like, I want to try to cover it all. And obviously that gets harder to cover it all when you're limiting yourself to 20 yards.
Yeah.
So when you put yourself in situations where you're looking at a property, whether it's a new property, maybe it's a property of hunting, you just have to look at it through that different lens. Do you approach stand setup as far as how you go in to find that perfect stand? Like, do you approach that much differently? Like, I guess what I'm getting at is how do you decipher this is the spot I need for a 20-yard shot versus I can cover this, but I can't cover that, and they both look good. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you just got to roll the dice kind of and pick one, you know. I try to set myself up where I'm not going to have to turn in the tree if a deer is, you know, okay, a deer might come from over here, but I might not see him until he's, like, right there close. And then I got to try to turn myself around in the tree or something. So whatever I feel is going to give me the best opportunity where I'm not going to have to switch my position to get a shot. You know what I mean? Like, if you're saddle hunting, you want something that, where the deer is going to come out and it's going to be on the right side that you need it to be on. Or if I'm hunting on the ground a lot, I kind of figured this out last year because I did a lot of ground hunting. And that is real critical because now you're on the ground and, you know, you have a deer that's, you know, under 20 yards, sometimes under 15 yards for a while, and your bow's not drawn yet. It gets pretty intense, and that's what I really like about it is that intensity, you know, that uncertainty, you know, like, you don't know, is this going to happen, you know, or am I going to be able to pull a shot off, or is this thing going to pick me out at the last second? And I don't know, that's just what I kind of love about it, and that's the draw, that's the attraction. Because, like, when I started bow hunting, that's what, and I think a lot of guys feel this way, when you start bow hunting, it's that, you know, it's very hard to do, even with a compound, when you're younger or whatever, and you're starting off, and you have deer come in, and you're like, oh man, it saw me at the last second when I was getting ready to pull back, or, you know, I made a noise or whatever. It's like, it's those little things that maybe goof up the hunt or whatever, don't result in the dead deer, but that's what the stuff that keeps you coming back.
Yeah.
And the stuff that makes it, you know, realize that this is difficult to do. So those are the things that I like. So I like hunting on the ground, and I like, you know, like, think about it. Like, you know, a lot of these deer that I've shot with a traditional, but well, all of them, I've not drawn the bow to they're like under 20 yards.
Right.
You know, like, you see a buck coming, you know, like that one up there. Like, I knew he was coming up the hill right at me. I probably drew on him, you know, 10 seconds before he got within range and then shot him at like 30 yards, you know. But with a recurve or a longbow, I mean, there's times I've had deer from me to you away, and my bow's not drawn yet, you know, and you're just watching them, and they need to look away, and then something crazy happens, like a squirrel makes a noise, and they quick turn their head and look totally the other way, and they're 10 yards, 5 yards, and you draw back and let it rip right through it, and you know, it's like that. That's the excitement. That's what I'm going after.
100%. So still sticking with on the lines of setups, like you were talking about the walnut tree, you were kind of exposed, you moved to a cedar tree. Obviously a cedar tree has more cover.
Yeah.
But, like, I've found this in many, many cases. I hunt out of a lot of hang-on tree stands, and I do some saddle hunting now, and I'm almost always trying to set myself up that I can cover as much as possible. So, like, I mean, most of the hang-on stands I've hunted out of over the years, I mean, you get some situations where you're really, you know, you're up against a barrier and you're not shooting behind you. But a lot of stands I've hunted out over the years, I can shoot 280, 300, 320 degrees. I'm shooting a big range of stuff. And, you know, now with the saddle hunting, like, I actually prefer the ring of steps for my platform.
Okay.
Because I don't, like, you'll see people that'll stand on a platform, and if they want to shoot a weak side shot, they'll they might go over top of their bridge, or maybe they'll do the thing where they like put their tether, you know, over the shoulder and twist around to shoot that weak side shot. I don't do that. I just keep the tree, and I do that because that's I listened to John Eberhardt and that made sense, and I had a buddy that did that way. He taught me. So I just try to keep the tree between me and the game as much as I can and just walk around the tree. So
yeah.
Like with a saddle, you can shoot 360 degrees around a tree. You can walk around the tree. But like from what I'm hearing, what I'm listening to, and as I'm thinking about this, it sounds like you've got to commit to one section of your setup, and that's what you got to commit. You might have to sacrifice other stuff in order to A, keep cover, and B, set yourself up for this perfect shot rather than decent shot opportunities elsewhere. Yeah. Is that accurate? Or?
Yeah, definitely. And what helps me personally with that is that's how I usually that it helps me to make a better shot when I have okay, yeah, I could twist and turn and shoot over here, but my best opportunity is for the animal to be right there. I'm already in that position, whether I'm sitting in a chair or in the stand or whatever. And so my confidence level is way up. When I get that shot opportunity, that the one that I was like really hoping for, that all this strategy has been put in for, there's no doubt then. Where, especially with a stick bow, at least it has for me, when the animal came in differently or I had to try to quick turn around in the tree or something, you're already thinking like, you know, all the stuff that you have to do to pull this off. You don't want to throw anything else in the mix, you know? So if I'm saddle hunting, I've yet to shoot at a deer out of the saddle with a recurve, but I mean, it's going to happen at some point here. I don't hunt a whole lot out of it, you know, but yeah, I'm going to set up where off my strong side, that's going to be my shot. Not to say that I wouldn't maybe try the other way, but that's what I'm going to go for. And it's going to have to be a unique situation to make me like want to turn around in the tree. But I use a bigger platform. I have the Mission platform is pretty big. So if it's on the tree just right, I could totally turn around on that. Like I'm in a tree stand with my back against the tree. And then I'm still, it would be like my strong side then if I could get pivot around on it, you know, without the deer seeing me or anything, I could pull that off. I've shot some groundhogs like that. That's all I know.
That's how you learn. That's how you practice. You know, we touched on it and you did talk about it a little bit, but I almost got to go back to it because I'm thinking about this from the angle, like somebody reached out to me and they said, I'd love to hear a traditional episode because they're interested. They're new to it. They're learning it and stuff like that. And what I'm hearing, and I'm putting myself of what it would be in my shoes. I'm thinking I got to cover as much as possible. I'm going to go into my mindset of hunting like I do with my compound. But the biggest thing that I'm picking up with this is you're committing. You got to change your frame of mind and have a different mindset. Like and understand, like I am. This is different. I am sacrificing the way I hunt to be more specific, to be more accurate. Because I think that's where people I've talked to. They kind of get held up. Like you're trying to with a setup. Like I know I would be that way. I would pick a spot. This is why I need to be here. There's intersecting trails. There's all this stuff. But I know this is a good trail. But if he comes on this trail over here, I got to make sure I have a setup for this. And that's really not your mentality, from what I'm gathering. You're really looking. Yeah. I have to commit to this in order for this to work.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's times where you'll do a bunch of sits and, you know, the deer won't do what you want them to do, or they're not in range, or, you know, like for instance, last year I was hunting on this place late season and it was an organized hunt. So it was broken down into zones and I had this one particular zone and I don't know how many acres it was, but the best spot I could find was a ground setup where it was really thick and the deer popped into this on this like really good trail. They just popped into this one opening and the area was probably not a whole lot bigger than this room we're sitting in. And then off, you know, 10 yards or so, there was a fallen over tree, like a forked tree that was up real high and it was engulfed in vines. It was laying on the ground. And I just looked at that and I thought, well, if I tuck in right up against that tree as a backdrop, now no deer is going to be, there's no, I wouldn't even be able to turn and shoot behind me at all. I can't shoot to the right. I can't shoot to the left. I can't shoot behind me. But if deer walk on that trail and come into this little grassy opening, they're, I'll see them coming and they're right there, you know? And so I had a chair I'd set up there and I, you know, it was like all the dead grass. I'd pile it up on all the thorn bushes. So I had this like little pile in front of me and I'd sit there with the ghillie suit on and I shot, I think, three deer. I missed one. Oh no, I missed two from there. Shot over one, shot under one, and I killed two from there off the chair in late season. It was pretty intense, you know, but like there was times where the deer are right there, you know, 10 yards and I have tension on the string and they're just kind of, they're not in position yet. Or I know if I go to lift my bow and try to draw, they're instantly going to see me. And they're walk. And one night, the one doe was like literally walking right at me. And I'm thinking, how close is she going to get? There's no way I can try to draw on her. She's coming straight at me. She probably got like, I don't know, 5 yards. And then like looked at me and it was, you know, too late. I couldn't do anything. I was like froze. There was nothing I could do. And then the other one got spooked too and they took off. But it was really cool. Like a setup like that, you know, where you might just be sitting in this little thick area. And we all know that deer go in those super thick spots and tunnels through there, through spots like that and thickets and stuff. And you think like, oh, you know, well, I got to hunt on the outside of that. But I'll get, if I can find a little opening inside something like that and sit in there on the ground and get the wind right. And this spot was great because the wind was I faced like west and north. So in late season, like everything was hitting me in the face and going straight out behind me. And you know, I was probably 45 yards away from my truck in a little parking lot where we could park. And I would just crawl through the brush and crawl under this deadfall tree and set up my chair and right there. And I know all the other guys that are hunting, they're going like all the way in this area and walking in, you know, a ways and stuff. And the setup was just dynamite.
So now, had it not been for hunting with a stick bow, is that something you think you would have ever done years ago when you're hunting with a compound?
Not really, but it would have been pretty intense. Yeah. And now I think, man, if I like sitting there, I'd see the deer coming through the thick stuff. You just see movement, you know, oh, that wasn't a squirrel. That's definitely deer coming, you know? And then, you know, a couple seconds later, it's like giant doe just popping into the opening right there. But this setup, what I'll touch on is this was not so perfect where when they, as soon as they hit the opening, they were quartered to me. So they had to then turn to their left to get broadside. And a lot of times, sometimes they did that, sometimes they didn't. Sometimes they started walking then straight at me. And that was where it became a problem. So if I get on this hunt again this year and get this spot, I'm going to set up, there's another fallen tree to my left, and I'm going to set up at the base of that fallen tree and position myself so when they come out into that opening, they're already perfectly broadside. Where now, this time, this last year, and I already had the whole setup kind of brushed in and everything. I didn't want to like change anything, and it was working, but it wasn't working like every time. But if I position myself over 5 yards over to this other tree and change the position of how the chair is, when these deer come into this opening, they're going to be broadside, and then it'll be a lot easier to get drawn on them. But I was thinking, like, I've seen these deer come. I was like, man, I could just quick set up a compound and come in here some night and like see those deer coming from, you know, through their 15, you know, through their like 20 yards, 30 yards away and know they're coming and just draw the bow and be waiting. And as soon as they pop into that opening, I mean, it'd be pretty, pretty cool. But there, as fun as that would be, it's that time from when they are in that close range till am I going to get a shot off that moment. That's what's really awesome about it. That's what I like about it. It's like the uncertainty, you know, 100%. Like, and you do that way with your equipment too, you know, like forever, you know, people have been trying to make things more efficient, you know, with hunting and like everything else in life, but with hunting and our equipment and the bow's got to be faster and, you know, the sight's got to help us be more accurate and the release has got to help us break a shot cleaner, you know, and drop away rests and all that. So the only way that you can up the challenge if you're involved with all this modern stuff is to either lengthen the distance of your shots, which obviously is difficult, you know, and but then it can get unethical there, you know, because a lot of things can happen that are totally out of our control. You know, it's a live animal, so you don't want to be, you know, trying to shoot, you know, excessive ranges and everything like that. But at some point, it's like, how can I make this more challenging? And the only way to make it more challenging is start pulling back on regressing on the equipment and the technology. And eventually you're going to go back to, and that's what happened to me. It just felt like, you know, it just brought me back to using the simple recurve or a longbow, you know, and you're just shooting fingers off the shelf. Now you can take it even further back than what I'm doing and build a self bow and, you know, make your own arrows and cut your own points and stuff. I'm not at that point yet. I don't know. Maybe I'll get there one day.
See what you get in 10 years.
But this is hard enough, you know.
Yeah. I remember I had Ronnie Folk on the podcast one time. We were talking with him, and he told me this off the podcast one time, and I think he said it on the podcast too, but, you know, he went on trips for years hunting and doing all kinds of stuff, but he was in his mid-40s at some point, that, and he'd only been rifle hunting at that point in his life, and he was sometime in his 40s that he shot an elk, and he said it did absolutely nothing for him at that point. He was looking for a new challenge, and then he took up bow hunting. He's like, I was a kid all over again.
Yeah.
And I think you can have that exact same thing happen when you're hunting with a compound because of the efficiency of the technology, because of everything going on, that it makes it sense. Some people never will. Like, I know people that are like, I have zero interest. I love my compound. I'm going to have that. That's cool. But I think you're one, and there's a lot of people out there that are looking for something more, a new challenge, and that makes perfect sense. One thing I was thinking about was, as you were talking about setups earlier, when I was younger, I was hunting with my uncle and family and stuff. Like, I learned through him and setups we'd make. Like, he did a really good job, and he still does to this day, of necking down a setup, man-made situations. And one thing that he taught me was, and this is the benefit, right, of hunting on private land where you could do this kind of stuff, is he'd manipulate the trails, hinge cut a tree, just to turn them from one trail to the next, to pinch them down to a spot. And I thought, man, that makes so much sense. And then, you know, fast forward years later, and you get into the world of media and learning other hunters. And I remember listening to Gene Wentzel on a podcast one time. He said the exact same thing. He's like, you know, I've hunted stands already that the buck I was after took the trail that was 35 yards and I couldn't kill him. And he goes, all I did was, in between hunts, I took a handsaw and I went out X distance and hinge cut a small tree that blocked that trail off, that pinched that deer to come within, and I killed him at 15 yards. So I was curious, do you do stuff in your setups on private land that will manipulate it man-made to make your setups more efficient for a stick bow?
In a way, sometimes, but I do look for spots like that where a deer's going to try to circle around a fallen tree or something. That what came to my mind, there was a spot when I was scouting the property in Illinois back in March, and I've been on this turf for all these years, but I saw this other dead fallen tree, and the way the trail went around it, and there's actually another cedar tree at this spot too, and I was like, I told Tim, my buddy was with me, I was like, man, I'm like, that cedar tree, I'm going to be putting a stand in there, because I can just see from this other stand, I see this area where these deer travel up through this timber on this lower trail. It's like 50 yards below the other stand that I'm normally hunting in. And so I was like, I want to get something down there in that area because it's really thick down there, and I think I can get something pinpointed, like close range shot, you know. And I saw this cedar tree from a distance, you know, in the wintertime. I could tell there was a cedar there. So I want to go over there and check that cedar and see if there's anything, how well these trails go by this cedar tree. So I get down there, and here's this old tree that I don't know how many years, I mean, like petrified, almost log, you know, not like it's a fresh fallen tree, you know. And I think it was even chainsaw cut off, so it's like maybe 20 feet long and then, or 15 feet and cut, but the way that it's a big tree too, so the deer aren't jumping it, they're just kind of coming around it, and when they come around and come back on the trail, if they're coming from that way and I'm a right-handed shooter, they're going to come around that tree, and as they come, the trail comes around, immediately as they come around the point of the tree, they're going to be broadside, you know. So I can draw in at that last second, they'll be right there, you know. So something like that, I'll look for a spot like that where, you know, where the deer will be in position. Like when I talked about that ground setup, like how the deer would, as soon as they came into the opening where they were in my range and open, they were typically quartering too. So by just changing where I'm at, I want the shot to be present as quick as possible. So I try to look for something like that. If a deer's going to, you know, pop out into a field, I could be over to the side and back a little bit. So as the deer gets out it's already now quartered away.
Yeah.
And it's like, if they, you know, but things like that can get pretty intense where you don't, you might not hear the animal coming or anything. And you know, you got to be ready. Like when I was hunting that spot late season, I'd sit there in the chair and I would put a glove on the ground so my tip of my bow limb could rest on that instead of being in the dirt. And I'd sit there just holding the bow like this, you know, just ready to go. All I had to do is just grab the string and
I don't think you can get a harder hunt, what you just described, than late season when everything is bare. They've been hunted and chased for 2-3 months, whatever it's been, on the ground with a stick bow. I don't know if there's a harder way to hunt deer.
Yeah, I haven't found any. I haven't used a spear yet, but
is that even legal?
I don't know. I don't know.
What the heck was that? What the heck is that name of that one type of spear?
It's like an atlatl.
Yeah, atlatl. Yeah,
something like that. It's called.
Yeah, I saw those, and I heard people say that they used to hunt with them. That there's states that that's legal, but I haven't.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, no, I mean, what I'm doing, it's a lot of fun. I mean, there's guys that I know though that have built their own bows. You know, cut down the tree, build their own bow, made their own arrows. Like a guy that I did one of the recordings with for Inside 20. His name's Bill Ward. He's from Tennessee, and you know, he's built his own self bows and made these river cane arrows. And I didn't even know what river cane was. It's like a grass type plant that grows along the river, I guess. And it makes a great arrow shaft, and he has to carve the nocks out of the end of it, you know, and everything. And then
that's some serious dedication.
Yeah, makes all his own stone points and tries to get them the same weight and everything. All the feathers from, you know, turkeys and that he shot and things, and he's gonna hunt with this, you know, like that's pretty cool.
That's insanely cool, and like that's an appreciation. Like that's taking the hunting experience to a new level, because there's an art form in that too. That like I don't have that. I'm not a creative mind. Like, and that's probably one thing that would separate me. Well, there's a lot of things that would separate me in the negative way, because I'm not that talented. But I mean, I think about somebody like that. Like you're taking a new level of appreciation for a bigger picture outside of just killing a deer.
Yeah.
And hey, whatever makes you a little bit closer with this thing we call hunting that we love in creation.
Yeah.
Are there other things, like you were talking about pinch points and looking for something, are there other things that we didn't talk about when it comes to just the way you view the woods, the way you make setups, the way you hunt? Are there other things that we didn't talk about that's different now hunting with a stick bow compared to when you were hunting with a compound?
I don't think so. I mean, I try to break it down and just keep it simple. And like I said, you're never going to cover everything. So I try to cover what the highest percentage is and where I feel I'm going to get the best shot opportunity, where my confidence, and so that keeps my confidence high. Yeah. You know?
Here's a question. The you've heard this, you've probably experienced it. I have too. And there's a giant push in hunting media about, you know, the first time in is always your best time, just because it's low pressure, all that stuff. And I've experienced that, and I'm sure you have too. And there's but that gets pushed so hard down people's throats that I think it can create for new hunters a lack of confidence if you don't get it done the first time in a spot or the second time, or there's this diminishing returns in a spot. So take that concept. Now you add in the fact that you're hunting with a more challenging weapon. You have to be more precise. You probably, I mean, I don't know what your success rate is as far as number sits until you can get, like, I don't know if you keep data like that. I don't.
Yeah, I never
but you, did. Just in my mind, when you're hunting in, trying to kill something inside 20 yards, you're going to have to probably have a little bit more time invested into some of those spots. So, what's your take when people talk about first sit? And all that, like, I'm sure you've had repetitive sits and had persistence. Like, talk to me about your confidence and your mentality when it comes to managing hunting pressure added with the stick bow.
Yeah. For me, I think it's dependent on how the spot is and how you're going to get to it and get out of it. If you can do it without bumping deer, and the time of the year it is too. If it's the rut and you're hunting a spot, especially like up in the mountains, you know, you could hunt the same little, pinch point or something, or a little funnel, you know, 5 days in a row. I mean, you're not going to have the same deer come 5 days in a row, so you're laying scent going in there and out. But I mean, you might see a buck on day, you know, four that comes through there, and he had no idea you were there those previous days. He has no until he gets to where you can shoot him, he doesn't know that there's, it's too late by the time, you know, he doesn't get the ground scent or anything because he's, you know, if you're accessing it right, you know, if like, for instance, there's a spot that I go to up on the game lands where I walk in a ridge top for a long way and it's just like rock and like boulders, you know, and I do, try to do as quiet as possible, but no deer are going to be like right there. And then it necks down and gets to a spot where they can break up over this ridge. And I try to just step on the rocks, you know, to where I get to this one hemlock tree where I put a stand and jump up in there. And I've sat that stand multiple times. Sometimes I'll sit it and nothing will come. And then there's been plenty of times I've had deer come and look right under the tree or right in front of me. I've killed a few there with the stick bow now. You know, but I feel like a spot like that, I feel like I could go there and sit that 5, 6 days, 7 days in a row, all day sits, and I don't think it would affect a cruising buck from coming up over that ridge at that time, you know, because I don't get the same deer on camera there doing the same thing. They're so sporadic. So something like that, I think you can get away with it.
That makes perfect sense to you. And my take on that for a long time has been I believe people push that whole concept of the first sit in managing your hunting pressure, that I think that that's takes really, really big importance when you're talking about hunting early season food patterns.
Yeah, for sure.
Because when you're doing that and you're hunting a tight core area, because like I think about a number of bucks that I've hunted over the years, whether I killed them or I didn't, I've said for a long time, if I, you know, some of the places I hunted in the past, if I had to pick a window to kill a mature buck, I used to say I would want the first 10 days of season because I had a setup that had food and cover and they felt comfortable to use it in daylight. Mm-hmm. And I did feel like I had to walk on pins and needles sometimes and make sure I was making the right decision of, am I accessing this with the right conditions? Is it the right wind? Am I going to be able to maintain a good wind while I'm on stand? It's not going to swirl, you know, all those things. And I've been guilty of this sometimes too, where I take that fear, or that first, you know, too much hunting pressure stuff, and I'll push that into the rut. I'll push that into late October, early November, you know, even going into rifle season or hunting places that are big woods that they might have a bigger home range.
Yeah.
I've been guilty of not giving enough time on a spot too. And I think this is an important conversation too, just generally sense, but I think for me, as I was thinking about stick bow hunting, that would be a thing that I would have to mentally prepare myself and overcome that hurdle of, you just got to ride this out, trust your access, trust all that stuff, and hunt. Don't be afraid to hunt.
Yeah,
sometimes I get afraid to hunt, like I'm gonna mess something up. And sometimes
I can relate to that. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm gonna wait, and it's not the right time. Sometimes you just got to go.
Yeah,
when I was younger, I didn't see all this stuff on the internet and all that and all these, you know, things. And I went as much as I could possibly go. I remember the first year bow hunting. I mean, I probably went like every single day up through the woods the same way and stuff. And, you know, eventually I would cross paths with something, you know. But so, yeah, I think access is great. But, yeah, obviously no matter what weapon you're hunting with, if you're hunting over, like, say, a food source early season and you're in there one night and – you know, you don't get the shot you need and you have to get out of there and you bump stuff leaving. And then the next night the deer come back and they're only going to put up with that so much. You know, it's kind of the same. I think it's dependent on the setup and the time of year and how you can access it. If you can get in there without jumping stuff, that's why I like to find spots where it's like, it's only like a small window of opportunity and you just sit there and wait for that window to open. Mm-hmm. You know, and when it opens and you're ready, and that's where it's get that. That's what I like about it, you know.
Well, how can you not? I mean, there's nothing quite like, I was just had a conversation with a guy. We weren't talking about deer hunting. We're talking about bear hunting, but it was along the same concept of, I love chasing these bear right now in a place where it's wet ground, no leaves and swamps and stuff like that. And there's something about sitting there in anticipation, waiting. And all of a sudden, boom, something appears there at 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it could have been anything. It could have been any game species you were after. It's just something about that allure of being close to something with a bow in your hand and making that happen. Like, that draw right there, I think, is what will keep me coming back until I physically can't do it, until I die.
Right. Yep. Same here. Yeah.
It's just so hard to beat. I mean, bow hunting is a really, really special thing. I have such a level of respect for anybody who picks a stick bow up and does this and commits to it. I'm not there for a bunch of reasons. Number one, I still love killing stuff with my compound. The biggest thing for me, and I learned this, like I have a recurve, and one thing I learned was it's not well set up for me. I think I'm shooting too much poundage. Mm-hmm. It's a little shorter. I think I'd like a long bow or a longer recurve. And I just don't have the best setup for me to practice comfortably and efficiently and get better with it. But the other thing, too, is the phase of life I'm in, the job I have and everything else, I know I would not be able to put the time commitment in to master that weapon in order to be successful and efficient with it. And that's right. going to do one of two things. Number one, it's not going to be fair to myself to not go out and enjoy my hunting season because I didn't have enough time to be build that confidence up with that. Number two, is not fair to the game that I hunt.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real conversation you have to have regardless of what you're hunting with. I mean, I know people that, you know, I'm going to hunt with a compound for the first time this year. And did you put that time in to really mm-hmm. make sure you're confident in killing stuff?
Yeah.
It's a journey we go on with hunting. That's the whole progression of learning and getting better.
Yep. Yeah. It's not, you know, for everybody, but I feel, you know, like one of the other guys on Inside 20, he said it perfect. You know, the one time when we did a podcast with him, his name's Clay. And he said, you know, if a guy's been hunting for years and has been seeing a lot of success with a compound, but he's thinking he might want to, you know, go to the recurve or longbow, they owe it to themselves to give it a try. Hmm. You know, because like you know, when the time's right, obviously, like when you have the time to practice and you feel confident with it and comfortable with it. But yeah, just don't ever think, I would say to somebody, like, don't ever think you can't do it or that, you know, oh, that's out of my reach because I, you know, just start somewhere, you know, start somewhere and you'll get to that point, you know, if it's something that you want to do. I would, you know, I don't say everybody's got to become a, you know, traditional bow hunter, but it really just, for me, it rekindled the excitement of bow hunting after all those years. And it's just made it so much better, you know, in my opinion, for me. And I've talked to a lot of guys that are like the same way. Like, you don't worry so much about, there was times where, man, I worried if I didn't kill a buck, you know, if I had a buck in close and I couldn't pull off the shot, like when I was compound, I was so mad, you know, like, you know, I don't know, maybe because I'm a little older now and I did shoot a bunch of deer, but like, it doesn't matter. That stuff doesn't matter anymore, you know? And it's like in the traditional realm, you know, nobody cares what you shoot. You know, like I can shoot, you know, booners a couple times and then he can go kill a little six pointer and no one's going to be like, you know, other people might be like, oh, I can't believe you shot that, but like nobody that hunts with a recurve or anything is going to be like, man, I can't believe so and so killed that little tiny buck. Like, because every kill is really exciting, you know, and that's just how it is, you know.
And I think that's when you have an appreciation for that specific thing. Like, I remember when I went on my elk hunt and the guide that was with me, and we were talking about, you know, size of bulls, blah, 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 mm-hmm. and this and that. And he just said to me, he said, there is something special about killing any elk with a bow. He said, I don't care how big it is. He said,
right.
When you can get yourself to an elk close enough to kill it with a stick and a string, he said, it doesn't matter what it is. That is something special. And we do live in a world where we get saturated by people who are big and better and have other opportunities and do different stuff. And I'm not downplaying mm-hmm. that, but it can take away from your experience. And because I remember I said to him, I was like, well, what was one of your best elk hunting experiences? What's the best elk year? I don't forget what the question was, but he goes, it was a cow I shot with my kids with.
Yeah.
He's like, that was the most special elk hunt I've ever had in my life. And he goes, it's just a cow.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, that concept you talk about, like, in the world, like, everybody that understands hunting, the difficulty of hunting with that bow right there, mm-hmm. they have an appreciation to say, that was a tough feat for you to kill whatever you killed.
Yeah.
So I have a ton of respect for that.
Yeah, thanks. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, for me, last year, you know, I killed that buck there in Illinois, and I kind of, like I described the setup where I shot him out of that cedar tree, and it was great and all, but honestly, the coolest, what I felt like was the coolest shot or kill that I had last year was, it was literally a button buck.
Yeah.
And I killed the thing from probably
3 yards.
Oh my God.
You know, and it was, I know the day because it was my birthday, and I took off working that day, and my cousin and another buddy were going to do a little drive for me. And it was January 21st. You probably don't remember that, but the weather that day was like the coldest day we had last year. Okay. And it was going to be like whatever it was going to be, like 3 degrees or something, you know? And I was telling my cousin for a while, I was like, hey, I'm going to take off my birthday. I haven't shot a deer on my birthday. Not that that matters, but And we always do this little push late season, you know, and him and this other guy, Ryan, buddy of ours, they did it for me, I think the year before or the year or 22 or something. And I shot one with the longbow out of a stand, but I was like, this time I'm going to be on the ground. I want to do another ground setup. And there was a couple good bucks on this hill that I would have shot, but I would have shot a doe or whatever, you know. And the deer would come around this like side hill, and they were taking these trails that would go up over they'd break around and go up over the top. And sometimes they'd come over to where I had this little ground set up, and sometimes it wouldn't. I'd hide by this dead ash tree, and I could just kneel down there like perfect. I'd take like a foam pad and just kneel on it, you know, on the ground. So, and there's snow on the ground at this time too, so that makes it even a little tougher. But so I had this idea where the deer would go up over these two different trails, and sometimes they'd come to me. So I thought to myself, well, how can I block these deer from going, wanting to go that way? So I told my cousin, I said, yeah, I got an idea. And he's like, you're crazy. I said, it's going to work. Trust me. So I came there. I had two sweatshirts in my backpack and two hangers. And when I got in position, I hiked over, it's only like 40 yards or so, and hung them up above these deer trails, like right in the middle of these like two highway paths that were like 20 yards apart. And I thought, well, if the deer come around and they hold up in this one area before they kind of commit to either dropping off behind me or angling up possibly by me or cutting up over the hill. So now I've just cut off one of the routes that they're going to go. They're going to see these sweatshirts and just get like, what is that? And then it might make them come my way. So I call my cousin, tell him, all right, I'm in position, you know. So they start walking, and deer come in, and it worked perfect. Like they must have saw the shirts, because they like 9 of them came and stopped, and they all bunched up there. But then it was like, come on, what are you gonna do? Like, is one gonna commit to coming up to me, or are they gonna break off behind the valley behind me? And the one decided to go down across the valley. So all of them followed except for one, and that one starts angling up through this little spot, like coming right to me. And I'm like, I'm shooting this deer. I don't care what it is, you know. And it's coming. And so there's snow on the ground, so I when it's snow like that, I will wear a Tyvek suit, you know, like a painter will wear. So I got a new Tyvek suit because my other one's all ripped up. The night before, I had the kids color all over the brown magic marker, make it look a little like snow camo in a way. So there I am kneeling down. I mean, it was, like I said, it was like 5 degrees. It was cold. And I'm kneeling down there on this by this dead ash tree, and I had to turn to the other side of the tree, and this little deer's coming, and he had to duck under this fallen tree, and he pops up, and I'm at full draw, and he just kind of like he's quartering to me slightly, you know, but I'm telling you, he was not even 5 yards. It was pretty intense. And I stick this thing, you know, and it's like, I knew it immediately was a great shot. And it starts, it didn't know what happened. It runs. It ran right around the tree where I was kneeling. It almost ran into me, like right past. I could touch the blood trail from where I was kneeling and the tracks in the snow. You know, it was wild. And like that was intense. Now, if that would have been a giant buck, that would have even been,
oh my word,
cooler. But, you know, it wound up being a button buck. I didn't realize at the time until I got up to it. But, you know.
Who cares?
Yeah. But, you know, I could kill one of these bucks here and then shoot a deer like that. And just the way it happened, you know, this is pretty cool.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, before we go, if you had to point anybody towards other stick bow hunting resources that you value and trust and rely on that would advance you, what would you suggest to people?
Well, Inside 20 is a great group of guys, and you know, we're willing to help anybody, whether it's with your setup or just, you know, building your confidence, your shot process, whatever it is, you know, hunting tactics, anything. There's also the Push Archery. They have a lot of great content. They have a lot of courses on their site about, you know, shooting and techniques
and stuff like that, you know, courses that you can buy and they'll help you. There is some other guys on the internet. Tom Klum is a coach, an archery coach, traditional archery. He's a great guy to listen to. Anything he has to say is going to definitely help. And then I'm sure you've heard of Joel Turner. Mm-hmm. Stuff that anything from Joel Turner is going to be great. So yeah, there's a lot out there that if you pick up a bow and you're not sure about, I mean, there's many people that are going to, you know, help you get it tuned right and everything. I mean, get a hold of me. I don't know everything about it, that's for sure. I can tell you that. But I mean, I can get you started, you know, in the right direction, you know, especially if somebody's local. I mean, I live in Reading area of Pennsylvania here. So, you know, get a hold of me. I'd be willing to help anybody out.
Good deal. Well, hey, you brought up Inside 20. I'm assuming anybody looks up Inside 20, Facebook, Instagram, that whole thing. Is there anything else that people can follow, you should check out for Inside 20 going into this year? YouTube, right?
Yeah. We have a YouTube channel, and we do have a really big raffle coming up this fall. I can't mention anything about it yet, but it's going to be pretty awesome. We just got done with one here recently, and we raised over $5,000 for the Kid Outdoor Zone, which is a program. It's throughout the nation, but the one we were donating to was in affiliated with a church in Illinois, where the one guy Jake was going to. So we had a big raffle for that, from just stuff from our sponsors. You know, Lone Wolf Custom Gear gave us, you know, some money to use for, and we could have used it for whatever we want. We could all got ourselves new tree stands, you know, and we were like, hey, we're doing this, you know, to spread our faith and to give back. And, you know, so we used all the money from our sponsors. Another guy built us a custom bow. We got, you know, we had VPA broadheads in there, everything. It was like $3,000 worth of stuff that all went to one winner, and all the money we raised all went right to that kids program.
That's awesome. I love that. Well, make sure you guys check out Inside 20, YouTube, Instagram, social media, Facebook, all that good stuff. You've been taking the camera over the years, but you're doing it a lot more now.
Yeah, right? I'm getting more into it now. So this past year, you know, these guys were like, oh, you gotta, you know, get some kills on film. And I bought a Lone Wolf Custom Gear Razor camera arm, which is a great camera arm, especially for filming with the phone. And I got a lot of footage. I just did not get that buck kill on video.
No.
I had the phone on there, and Brad, I forget how to pronounce his last name.
Patazowicz.
Yes, yeah. That guy. He texts me in the morning because he was my partner for his competition last year.
Yeah, oh, you were partnered with him.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. So that morning, November 9th, he sends me a message. Hey, how's it going out there? You know, and he was telling me about a deer he saw, I believe, if I remember right. And I pulled the phone off the camera arm, and I was like, oh, man. I was like, that big one I've been after, just I've not been able to cross paths with him. I think I'm ready to shoot a deer if I get a shot at something pretty decent here, you know. And I sent that text. I look over, and that buck's stepping down through the timber coming to me. And I didn't put the phone back on the camera. I just dropped it in my pocket, grabbed the bow, and that was it. All I had was the phone last year to video with. I had an old GoPro I borrowed from my brother-in-law, but it was like one of the first ones ever. And I could, it's a simple camera, but these ones with remotes and stuff is the way to go. So like this thing, if I would have had it behind me, which I did sometimes, you have to push the button and then you have to push the record button. So to just like have it on my head and try to reach up and do that, I couldn't tell if it was even recording without looking at it, you know. And then there's no time to do that, you know, in a hunting situation. So
right.
I am going to get one of these DJI cameras here soon, and you know, here maybe next week or something, I'll order it and get comfortable with that and familiar with that before the season comes. So that's going to be pretty cool,
because I think I found something that would be harder. It would be stick bow hunting on the ground in late season with a camera. There we have
it. I'm going to try it, man.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to try it. One thing I want to try to have happen this year is I want to set that camera out a little ways away, because I think the remote will work at a pretty good distance, and get a deer between me and the camera where you can see me like in the ghillie suit or something and shoot the deer. I don't know.
That's
wishful thinking, but I think I'll pull it off if it all works right.
Good deal. Well, Matt, thank you so much for having me over. And doing,
thanks
doing
a lot.
This. It was a lot of fun.
Anytime, man.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.